Congressman Turner, good morning and welcome back to Classic Country Radio.
Good morning, Bucks. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have a very serious deadline coming up in the next few days, sometime between now and perhaps the end of this week, sometime early next week. It looks like there's going to be a 4-vote in the House on Speaker Pelosi's health care plan, some 1,900 pages in all. How much input were you and your fellow Republican members of the House, how much were you allowed to contribute to this, Congressman Turner?
Well, nothing. And what's really important about your question, Bucks, is that really, you know, there are 435 members of Congress. And Nancy Pelosi proceeded to do this without input from the Republicans or from the Democrats on our own party. You know, this is a bill that had begun through the committee process and came out of House committees at 1,300 pages. And then Nancy Pelosi reached out, grabbed this bill, took it into her office, took three or four people with her, and redrafted the bill and made it 1,990 pages. So it was slightly more than 1,000. Now it's slightly less than 2,000. And this has not been in a committee. They're not going to allow it to be subject to any amendments on the House floor. This is absolutely Nancy Pelosi, one person elected from one congressional district out of 435 as Speaker of the House, drafting in her office a bill that she wants to see passed and taking it to the House floor with an up or down vote without really the input of the American people.
Are you getting the sense that some of the Democrats are, even them, a little bit miffed at this process?
Absolutely, because there are things in this bill that they don't like. There are things that should not be in here. There should not be a $500 billion cut to Medicare, a system that we know is already on its way to insolvency. You can't make it more solvent by taking money out of it. There are things that interfere with the doctor-patient relationship and really the way in which medical care is currently provided. Those are things that everyone is concerned about. And although, you know, we have to expand the opportunity for coverage to individuals who currently do not have coverage, you know, the president, when he went down this path, said, you know, if you like your doctor, you're going to keep your doctor. If you have coverage you like, you're going to be able to keep that coverage. And what they have coming to the House floor is Nancy Pelosi's bill. That's just not true.
There are so many issues of this kind that have come up since we first had a plan to look at those House bills that we were talking about back in August. And every time somebody raised an objection, the White House or the backers of the bill elsewhere would say, oh, no, that's wrong. That's not in. Yet when you read it, it was in there. And now all of these things are back in there, aren't they?
Absolutely. And the White House did do that game. You know, there were four or five bills floating around. There's one over in the Senate, a couple in the Senate. And they'd say, you know, well, no, that's not what we're for. Well, this bill embodies every aspect that people were concerned about and more. This is a grab for government-run health care that will transition us to a process where the government is in charge and not our doctor, not the patients, and not our health care providers.
Now, you and I covered all of this in our hour-long conversation back a couple of months ago. But to go back over some of the salient points to you, what are some of the things in there that the folks, President Obama, after being sworn in, said he wanted to be the president of Main Street. Well, if we get out on Main Street, what are some of the things in this bill that would upset and shock Main Street?
Well, and I appreciate, by the way, the fact that you have focused on this bill and what's going through the House and the Senate to give people opportunity to get information. The hour-long conversation that you and I have had, you allowed me to place up on my website. So let me invite people to go to my website, turnaround.house.gov.
And still there, right?
It's still there. We have an hour-long conversation with you and me.
You really got into it in great detail because you were so familiar with it.
You also were very familiar with it and had great questions and answers. So let me go over what I think are probably the top issues that are of grave concern.
Okay.
The cut to Medicare. There are $500 billion that cuts in Medicare. Nearly $200 billion of it, 160 plus, is to Medicare Advantage. That's a program that many people in your listening area are currently under. It is a plan in which it has enhanced benefits. They are taking money out of that program to the extent that it is not likely to survive. So if you have Medicare Advantage and this thing and this passes, it is not likely that you'll be able to continue in that program. And that's a significant shift from what the president had said. Secondly, for Medicare overall, the cuts that are occurring, in order to do that, the president and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have placed in these bills mechanisms where they'll be reviewed of the types of procedures that will be permitted, the types of procedures that that will be advanced in their processes of trying to get cost reductions in order to be able to afford that $500 billion cut. Now, you know, I told you I had a senior at a town hall meeting that I had, 90-year-old gentleman stood up, and he made the point, Medicare is not just about the extension of life, it's also about quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they start talking about cuts to Medicare, it's not just an issue of will they get the care that they need to sustain life, it's also quality of life. If the 90-year-old gentleman who stood up had a new knee that he got when he was in his late 70s, and his view is that in this bill, they're basically going to say to him, you know, well, here's your cane. And his quality of life would have been impacted, and that's, you know, Medicare is about ensuring quality of life.
We have an 83-year-old mother-in-law who is part of our family, and she is scared to death about this. She should be, shouldn't she?
Absolutely, because the they believe that Medicare is spending too much money on care. Otherwise, they wouldn't be taking money from it, and that's certainly not the opinion I have. The third thing, of course, is this this issue of the coverage that we currently have. Now, there are over 100 members of Congress on the Democrat side who have supported a bill that would make Blue Cross and Blue Shield illegal. And these 100 members or so, they're part of the 218 that want to do this. Their view is that this is a step in transition to get complete government-run health care. So in this 1,990 pages, they institute a significant amount of controls on our health insurance carriers and how we relate to them. It's going to make a difference in the coverage that we receive and the viability of those carriers that will lead us all then to whether or not we're going to be put on the public option. There are nonprofit, nonpartisan estimates that indicate that 114 million people are going to be dumped from their current private health insurance and placed on the public option. That because of the difficulty this bill is going to provide for them to be able to operate and the burdens that are placed on employers, that employers will walk away from their coverage and they'll be placed on the public option. Another issue to be concerned about is cost. Now, there are two things wrong with the current United States economy that are structural: the budget deficit and the trade deficit. And this will have a significant impact on the budget deficit. The increased cost to the federal government as a result of this mean that we're all going to end up paying. And I don't believe it's sustainable. We all worry about whether or not Social Security can be sustained, whether or not Medicare can be sustained. To institute a program like this at a time when we're concerned about trying to have the government live within its means is, I believe, just irresponsible.
Well,
those are some of the issues, Buck.
Speaker Pelosi has referred to the bill's cost of being under $900 billion, under $900 billion. You start throwing these terms around, it's unreal, isn't it? She was saying something like $894 billion, but there are other estimates that place it much higher than that. The figure we've been hearing is, what, $1.2 trillion?
Well, and this is the thing I always find so fascinating about this, and I know, you, Bucks, you know this. Now, these are 10-year projections. 10-year projections where they're not, it's not a perfect science, because they're going to open the doors to this program. They're not limiting. They're not passing a bill that says we will only spend X amount of dollars. They're putting a program in place that automatically spends.
Right.
Even if they're off 10%, it's a huge number. So the fact that they say that they've, you know, that they have a cutoff amount is really not in the bill. This is going to increase. It is going to increase the deficit, and it's going to make it more difficult for us to pay our bills.
One contention they have is that this will be a bill that will cut costs, cut medical expenses. I don't believe there's ever been a bill that's gone through Congress that has cut anything. Has there been?
No, and when they say that, I mean, they're basically talking about looking at the coverage and care that people currently have and taking money out of it. They're not really talking about savings and that the things that you're going to receive are going to cost less. They're talking about you receiving less. And that's the impact that I think is of most concern to people, because in healthcare, no one wants to receive less. Now, they're also in this as they go to try to pay for this, because you know when they say it's going to cost just under $1 trillion, they have to go find that money. They have to borrow it. They have to generate deficits. They have to find cuts elsewhere. One of the places that they go is they put a 2.5% excise tax on medical equipment. This has been coined and dubbed as the wheelchair tax, but I don't know how you put a tax on medical equipment and say you're going to reduce people's costs. You're going to increase the cost of equipment that people obviously need.
There's also talk of some big tax increases, looking at top-end income earners. But when you're doing that, you're also talking about a lot of small business people, aren't you?
Absolutely. This impacts small business. There is a tax on small businesses that that goes directly to the issue of providing health insurance that will cause many small businesses to cancel their health insurance policies and place people on the government option. Again, some of the initial estimates are 114 million people who currently have health insurance through their employers will lose it as a result of these increased taxes and fees to businesses and the public option that's there. And again, what's amazing about people who have health insurance coverage typically like it and are happy with their coverage. They like their doctor, they like the care they receive, and they like the coverage. So this is a bill that goes in and fixes something that's not a problem. Taking people off the coverage that they have, where they like their coverage, is never the aim that the American people were seeking.
I'm in that boat, and I think most people feel the way I do. I might gripe now and then about an extra test or something of that nature, but it's only because the best medical care in the world is available to us. And our doctors occasionally utilize it, maybe sometimes overutilize it. But when I get those reports back, I'm happy because it shows I'm in good health and I've been well cared for. I think there's so many of us feel that way.
Yes, I got to tell you, Bucks, it's almost humorous when people in advocating for this bill argue that insurance companies have difficult bureaucracies to deal with. Because if you don't like bureaucracy, you're not going to like government-run health care.
Today is the 130th birthday of Will Rogers, the great American humorist, who once said, "There's no trick to being a humorist when you have the whole government working for you."
Well, and he had one of my favorite quotes about Congress. He said, "Now imagine that you're a member of Congress. Now imagine that you're an idiot. But I repeat myself. I remind myself frequently of that as we look at the issues in front of us so that I can try to be one of the good ones."
Well, what's the numbers like? What are you looking at as this comes to a vote sometime in the next couple of days? I've heard it said that Speaker Pelosi would not bring this to a vote unless she thought she had the votes there, the numbers there. What are you hearing?
I believe that's the case. I mean, there are a lot of pundits on the House floor that believe that that she doesn't have the votes, that the elections today will even make it more difficult. But this is where I come down. I believe that the people who are following Nancy Pelosi right now want to pass this bill. They believe this is what they want to do. They are philosophically behind her that there needs to be a government takeover of healthcare. The only thing that's going to hold them back as to whether or not they believe it is politically viable for them to do it now. And some of them are going to be willing to do it even if they think that the American people don't want to do it, because they believe that's what needs to be done. Now, the Senate, I think, is a little bit more sensitive, and I'm certainly hoping that the sensitive nature of the Senate will come into play and they will slow this down. But I believe that the people who elected Nancy Pelosi Speaker want to pass this bill. The question will be whether or not they do, of course, and we'll see that this week.
Talking about the election results from yesterday, that was going to be a question I had for you. Is this going to be a game changer in the House, in the Senate, going forward on a number of these very liberal innovations, new legislation being brought up before Congress?
Well, I think it should be. You know, I think that pretty much, the country is one that that has a nonpartisan spirit to it. I mean, they don't. I don't think that we walk around saying we're all Republicans or we're all Democrats or only looking at each other with those labels. They want the job done. They want this to be a strong country. They want a strong economy. They want a strong national defense. And when Barack Obama campaigned, he campaigned saying he was going to do those things. Now, what he's done instead, I don't think the American people were prepared for, and I don't think that that is what they have wanted. I don't think that they want our energy costs to go up, even though they want energy independence. They want environmentally sensitive energy. I don't think they want the bill that came out of the House that'll make it more difficult for us to produce energy, energy to cost more and more difficult to produce jobs. They want those who don't have health insurance to have coverage, and they want some fixes in our health care. They don't want people to be subject to pre-existing condition exclusions when they change jobs and be impacted. But I don't think they want this. And I think this is a message that I hope the White House hears, that even though people believe that there are things that they want changed, this is not the change they want.
Third District United States Congressman Mike Turner, the old Chinese curses, may you live in interesting times. Well, we're living in interesting times, aren't we?
We certainly are. And, you know, one election that we should note that was a change is congratulations to the mayor-elect Lightsel for the city of Dayton. There's a change there that I'm certainly looking forward to, and I know people in the region are looking forward to. We certainly wish him well and look forward to his leadership.
You know, I was thinking a lot about that in the past few days. I saw some of the campaign material of the incumbent mayor who was defeated, Ryan McGlynn, and citing some of the accomplishments. And as I looked at them, they were all started during your administration.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I tell you what, one of the biggest concerns for the city is that there is a lead time, a lag between when you start a program or a project and then when it occurs. When the mayor-elect hits City Hall, you know, he's going to have a time period where it's going to take a while to turn that ship. But we look forward to see what's going to happen because the city of Dayton has such great possibilities, has such great people, such great ingenuity. With the right leadership, I know it will turn around and we'll see great things from it.
And everything is harder when you can't blame it on George W. Bush.
Isn't that the case? Even the weather. They blamed Katrina on George W. Bush.
Congressman Turner, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Anytime. Yes, sir.